Welcome back to Underrated Podcast. I'm Q, your host through this wacky world of wonder. I have a few housekeeping notes, and then we'll jump into the next episode of Warehouse 13. So, first of all, I just want to say thank you for listening to the podcast. I have, as of this recording, 80 people listening, and I know that sounds really small, but there are no small listeners. And quite honestly, I thought that maybe 10 people would listen to this. So 80 is amazing. And I think only 2 or 3 are family members. So that's really exciting. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And hopefully this will continue to spread and we can add numbers to our nerd community and continue to spread the gospel of underrated media. Another note is that I'm going to be recording this episode and the next one, and then after that, I'll be doing 2 episodes of Warehouse 13 per podcast. Because if I don't, then I'm going to be spending about 65 episodes on Warehouse 13, and they don't all necessarily need their own episodes. So I think this means that the podcast episodes themselves will be a little bit longer, but that means that we will get through Warehouse 13 and then be able to get on to other shows and other movies and other things that I want to talk about and hopefully some of you want to hear about, or maybe someone will suggest something and we can get to those suggestions. So that will be coming again with Warehouse 13 Episode 5. We'll start that with Episode 5 and 6. They'll be recorded together. Okay. I think that's all I have as far as production notes on my end. So let's get back into Warehouse 13. Small reminder that you can stream this on Amazon Prime, iTunes, YouTube, Vudu, I think. And actually, I think it is now up for free on sci-fi.com. I think the app and the website are both, they're both adding episodes of different shows to watch. So they've got Battlestar Galactica up there now, and actually Xena. So I know I'm going to be covering Xena in the future, and I think that would be an excellent way for you to join in to watch again, watch for the first time when I get there. So that works out for us. Anyways, so on to episode 3, titled Magnetism. It was directed by Jace Alexander, who we had at the, in the pilot, who directed the pilot. It was written by Jack Kenny, who also produces and is a showrunner for Warehouse 13, and he will pop up as director as well. And he has written and directed and created all over television. So Jack Kenny is a name that's been around the block a little bit. Good for him. Good for you, Jack Kenny. So the episode opens in Paris, France, and Pete is Mission Impossible style hanging from the ceiling to swap out the guillotine that killed Marie Antoinette. Meanwhile, Micah is looking fabulous in a leather jacket, and she beats up some of the guards, or gendarmes, if you're feeling French, and then manages to berate Pete for not following the plan once again. If you are seeing a pattern emerging, you're right. Pete doesn't follow the plan. It's his thing. So back at Warehouse 13, Pete and Micah are arguing. They're arguing in the aisles of the warehouse, and it's building up negative energy in the aisles. Artie tries to warn them, but they don't listen because, again, the aforementioned arguing. And he goos them, which then causes hilarity to ensue, and they laugh and yuck it up and seem to be on better footing after that. Micah is talking to Lena about Pete and the bickering and him not following the plan and yada yada yada, and Lena says that Pete is sexy, which, weird, but anyways, Micah says that Pete is not her type. Stick that feather in your cap for later, because I will come back to that. Artie tells Micah and Pete that they are both in charge separately as they come to him arguing about the other one, but then he sends them off to Colorado. A few scenes prior, we had seen in Unionville, Colorado, a boy smashes violin, a woman smashes and then graffitis a hospital. She smashes an urn against the hospital and then graffitis it. And then we see someone named Sister Grace standing on the roof of a building. So this is the case in Colorado that Micah and Pete are arguing about. Micah first goes to talk to the EMT who treated the old lady Meg and talks about her diabetic bracelet because Micah knows a lot. Pete doesn't follow plan. Micah knows a lot. These are their things. Sister Grace insists that she knows she can fly, so she gets up on the roof of the church and jumps. Back at Warehouse 13, there are energy surges, and Artie tells Lena that he's ignoring the hacker pest, because that definitely works. So then back in Colorado, Micah is talking to the EMT Ross about the victims, trying to find a link, because Artie said that there's always a link. He, Ross, the EMT, stares at her chest and then gropes her. He seems apologetic and says that he doesn't know why he did that. He's married with kids. And Micah is much calmer than I would be in that situation. She just kind of brushes it off and tells him to stop it, and they continue on with the interview. Meanwhile, Pete is attending an AA meeting, and he meets the therapist Ellis Hayes, thinking that the therapist could be the link. Side note, my friend is naming her son Ellis. That's just an interesting personal note for me. Anyways, back at Warehouse 13, we find out that Edison, Tesla, and MC Escher were the ones who designed this current warehouse, which kind of accounts for its wibbly-wobbly ways, I would say, and electric ways. Back in Colorado, Micah visits Father Braid at the church, and as she's sitting there talking to him, she starts expressing her hatred of the patriarchy. Her dad, Pete, Artie, and all I have to say is same, Micah. Hard same. So on the, then we get a Farnsworth call between the agents, and they're at, Micah and Pete are apparently at an ice skating rink, because ice skating helps Micah think. And apparently, Joanne Kelly did some figure skating, and she actually wanted to be a hockey player. Again, small side note, stick that feather in your cap about Micah and Joanne Kelly, and we will return to it at a much later date. And I also just want to point out that Micah is wearing a business suit, and this is early seasons yet, and I will continue to bring up her attire because I think it says a lot about her frame of mind, so that'll come up again as well. She is still right now trying to keep that G-woman thing happening. She's still working that government agent angle, and that'll change in the future for sure. So then Micah starts to punch Pete and Sheriff Mac, and then is locked up. And Pete bails her out, but he keeps her on the case, despite Micah wanting him to leave her, saying that, you know, she's a danger to the case and all that. But he says that he trusts her. Aw, so cute. Those two just pinch their cheeks. They're so cute. They go back to Father Braid's office and discover that the chair in his office is from his family. James Braid, the quote-unquote father of hypnotherapy, and the combined with the voice of Braid's descendants, caused the springs in the chair to magnify the confessions made by people in the chair, unlocking their subconscious thoughts and causing them to act in these odd ways. So Sheriff Mack, who had been creepy, honestly, with Pete beforehand, is now in the church holding everyone in attendance at gunpoint, wearing a bomb vest. And he keeps talking about keeping his people safe. This scene, I would have to say, doesn't play so well now, given recent events, as it probably did back in 2008. Again, not that it's ever okay to see people holding a room full of people at gunpoint, but it holds, I would say, a little more weight now, given what's going on in America. So it's a little unsettling, a little more unsettling to watch this scene than it was 11 years ago. Pete goes to goo the chair in Father Braid's office, but nothing happens. And while he's doing that, Micah is talking to Sheriff Mack, and she actually manages to talk him into a standstill. And he says that they shouldn't have sent a woman to do the job, which just sets Micah off, especially on a day like today. So then she runs and tackles him. And Pete, meanwhile, is hacking the chair with an axe and finally destroys it, and then comes out to Micah, who has now wrestled Sheriff Mack to the ground, and they are desperately trying to get the bomb vest off of the sheriff. So Pete grabs the bomb vest and runs outside, where it goes off. And for a split second, we're concerned that they killed off the second lead character in the second episode. But they didn't. He's okay. He comes running back in to the church. A little worse for wear, but alive. If he had been Sean Bean, he definitely would have been dead. Nobody has a problem killing off Sean Bean. So then, back at the warehouse, Pete and Micah let Artie think that they blew up his car that he had let them borrow as payback for double talking them. Essentially, they talked to each other, found out what Artie's game was, and this is their payback for it. The warehouse suffers a second energy surge, and on the electricity panel, the LED lights form the phrase knock, knock. And that ends the episode on that cliffhanger of a moment, which brings us to the thinky thoughts of the episode. So, this episode, Resonance, nope, that was last episode. This episode, Magnetism, sorry, is another formula of an episode. And you would expect something like that because this is really only the second episode after the pilot. So they're still trying to establish what this whole world is about, what the characters are about. And I would have to say again that the characters are the reason to keep coming back to the show. I like that they don't get along right away. Not just Micah and Pete, but Micah, Pete, and Artie. You see Artie and Lena as a team kind of set up against Micah and Pete. And with Micah and Pete, it's not just an oil and water thing either. Micah clearly has some real issues with the men in her life telling her what to do. I mean, we've already kind of covered her relationship with her dad, and just sitting in that chair talking to Father Braid, she brings up other issues that she has, and I think it's really relatable. And likewise, Pete comes off as the funny guy, but he has a big heart, and he really does get hurt when people don't trust him. And I think we all know somebody who is like that, who's the big front man, funny guy, funny person. Nobody really thinks that they're paying attention or listening, but they have just as much emotional investment in anything as anybody else. It's just their state of being is a little louder, a little more flamboyant than other people's. And as someone who is not that person, I definitely need those big personalities in my life, because otherwise things would be very boring. So I do appreciate it. Artie is grumpy, again, but only because he cares so much. He has lost people. He doesn't want to get close to new agents, because if they die or leave the warehouse, he will get hurt again. And I think it comes out pretty early on that Artie wears his grumpiness as a shield to protect himself from getting hurt again. Luckily, I think the formula for the episodes ends pretty matter-of-factly with this episode. The next episode, the season and the team and the characters really take off and really start to dig into bigger mysteries, bigger character arcs, and start to bring that wonder that the warehouse promises. Again, kind of have to suffer through this one, but there are some good moments, and just kind of look forward to the next, not even half of the season, the next 18 episodes of the season, because it just gets better from here. So on that note, because this episode is so thin, there aren't really any, not too many production notes for this one. Fan reaction is mixed, I have to agree. Formula is formula. Most people were commenting on the formulaic aspects of the show. And the other thing was people seem to have a problem with Joanne Kelly's acting. And I know I'm completely biased, and as I have stated and will state again, I will defend Joanne Kelly to the death. But I honestly don't know how her acting is any worse than anybody else's. Especially early on in a show, people are still figuring out character beats and how their characters would react to situations and their relationships with other characters on the show. So I think any cracks in the armor would be that, would be an actor figuring out their character. And also I think it has to do with Joanne Kelly's character Micah. She's the straight man in this relationship. It's, I would argue that the straight man is harder to play than the color commentator, right? So she doesn't get to make a lot of the jokes. She has to stay pretty flat. She has to have that no-nonsense affectation a lot of the times. Emily Deschanel has to do the same thing on Bones. Stanna Katic, to a lesser degree, has to do it on Castle because you have Nathan Fillion playing, you know, big personality Richard Castle, and Stanna Katic is, again, has to play the straight-laced cop to that character. So I think Micah will have more opportunities further on in the show as she kind of gets to break out of that, you know, buttoned-up straight man character. So I think as the show progresses and as Micah's character grows, we get to see Joanne Kelly flex her acting muscles a lot more. And I would be interested to see if the fan reaction to her character changes, or if people just don't like Joanne Kelly. I don't know. So we will figure that out together as we go along here. And that brings us to the artifact of the week. This week I want to talk about Adolf Chalet's Shelby bulbs, which are the light bulbs produced by the Shelby Electric Company, which are said to never burn out. And the Shelby bulbs are what illuminate the warehouse. The real-world connection here is that the Shelby Electric Company was the manufacturer of the famous Centennial Light, a light bulb produced in the late 1890s that was donated to the Livermore Pleasanton Fire Department in Livermore, California in 1901. It has burned almost continuously to this day. Notations on the Livermore Pleasanton Fire Department historical section, based upon the light bulb, state that it is the construction style and quality which gives the Shelby bulbs their longevity, not as an anomaly. That is what is lighting up the warehouse, and I just think that's fascinating. And of course, if you have a building like the warehouse, you need to keep the lights on. And what better way than kind of the everlasting gobstopper of light bulbs, but a Shelby bulb. So that is fascinating. Again, Edison, Tesla, M.C. Escher, all these people lived, they existed. These Shelby bulbs existed in the real world. So there's just that small spark, no pun intended, maybe a little bit, of verisimilitude that just makes this show, I mean, it's what keeps me coming back to the show, episode after episode. I love it. And that's all I have for you on episode 3, Magnetism. Remember that you can follow Underrated Pod on Twitter at _ratedpod. You can email me at info.underrated@gmail.com. You can find this podcast now on Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. Woo! That's very exciting for me as a one-person show that is up. You can also find the podcast at underrated.castos.com. That's castos.com. It's got all the episodes up there. That's kind of my home base, as it were. So please remember to subscribe and review and get at me about underrated things that you want to hear about, or tell me why you do or do not like Joanne Kelly's acting, and I will squarely defend her, because that's just who I am. All right, as always, thanks for listening. Peace, nerds.